Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org or on the WDIY app or many streaming services. Today is January 28, 2026. The markets were flat today, with the Dow closing at 49,015, the NASDAQ at 23,857, and the S&P at 6,978. Our topic tonight is succession planning. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable speaking live, you can just give your question to Bob and Cindy and they'll bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. My guest this evening is Tom Garrity of Compass Point Family Business Consulting. Since 2003, Tom has been founder and managing partner of Compass Point Family Business Consulting, a leader whose career has been deeply rooted in family businesses and legacy building. With decades of experience as president of two family-owned manufacturing companies, Tom has seen firsthand how communication, alignment, and shared vision can turn family enterprises into lasting community cornerstones. Driven by curiosity, competitiveness, and a passion for helping others succeed, Tom has built a consulting firm focused on developing strong teams and sustainable processes. Compass Point's competencies include strategic planning and increasing business value, leadership development, governance, succession planning, next-gen development, leadership and ownership transition, and next chapter planning. One of his proudest moments has been welcoming his daughter, Catherine, into the business, continuing a family legacy built on purpose and partnership. His story embodies what he means to lead with integrity, empower others, and prepare the next generation to carry the torch forward. Tom, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Laurie. Great to be here.
Well, we're talking about succession planning, particularly business. I do want to mention to our audience that many of the lessons and strategies that we're going to discuss tonight can really also be applied to any kind of transfer of wealth, because we have, you know, individual families and we have business families, but either way, we still want to take care of them. So when we first talked, and thank you, Andrea Coyne, for introducing us. When we first talked, you started with, are you ready for the silver tsunami? So let's start with setting the table for the impetus for our discussion tonight.
Yeah, so if the audience could see me, I'm part of the silver tsunami, right?
I would have been too, Tom, but they could help with that.
but really talking about this baby boomer generation in retirement, which I think is 46 to 64, the years of the birth. And, somebody born in 64 right now is 62 years old. So they've still got a fair amount of runway if they're a business owner and whatever their career is, but as a business owner, and especially if they're in a family business, there's still a lot of transition that's going to happen just with that generation, let alone the generations coming. And the estimates are enormous, right? $10 trillion that's going to transfer in wealth in these families. And the key is, in that transfer of wealth, a lot of these businesses are wealthy on paper, but not necessarily wealthy with liquidity. Mm. And if you haven't designed and prepared for succession and prepared a successor to continue the business continuity, not just the family legacy, and that's important, but the business continuity, a lot of that wealth's going to go away. And that's really what our work is about.
Yeah. I don't have a quote in front of me, but I remember years ago, there was a quote, I think, in the Wall Street Journal that quite often the business is lost by like the third generation. So you want to be in front of that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it's interesting. It's not just here in the States. The States, the saying is shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. Mm. I think in Japan, it's rice patties to rice patties in three generations, clogs to clogs in Holland. And what it's inferring is, you know, the first generation, the founder builds this entity, this business. The second generation, which is typically the sibling generation, comes in and now builds on what their parents had started and builds some strength and resilience in the business, and haven't prepared their kids as well as they were prepared, or brought them in as early as maybe that they were brought in for whatever reason. And the next generation just is not prepared. Nobody sets out to fail in these things. Mm-hmm. It's a lack of preparation, and that's why this succession planning is so important.
And the succession planning doesn't even necessarily have to include that the kids are doing the nuts and bolts of the business, but it could help them find the right people to do that. So, you know, can you explain to me how you kind of start with the business planning to make it good business planning when you either are approached by a business or I'm not sure if you seek out the business, but, you know, you have Compass Point Family Business Strategies. Tell me a little bit more about the firm. I know you have a partner. So let's kind of talk about how you approach this.
Yeah. So there's 9 consultants in the firm, and we work in the Mid-Atlantic. So it's DC to Connecticut, basically. And our core customer is somewhere between 5 and 250 million in revenues. If you look at the family business system. It really is a system. It's not just a business that's owned by a family. It's a system. And the system consists of 3 domains. There's the domain of the family, of course, mm-hmm. the domain of the business, mm-hmm. and the domain of the ownership group.
Mm.
Now, if those 3 domains all remained independent of one another, it probably wouldn't be so challenging, but they don't, right? They intersect with one another. So based on where you sit inside of that system, your perspective is much different. And if you don't have a voice at the table, when decisions get made, and let's say you're the spouse in the family, but you're not in the business, you're not in the ownership group, but suddenly some business decision gets made that's going to affect the family, of course that's going to raise ire. So the work that we do is addressing that entire system. So we're really good consultants at building a strong business. And as these things go generationally, there's more mouths to feed. So you've got to build a stronger and bigger business to feed all the mouths and the family as it grows and all the employees. But markets change too, right? I mean, nothing stays the same. So you've got to build a resilient business that can react and adapt to what the market's telling us. Equally important is building that resilience in the family. Who gets to come into the family business? Do you get in because of your last name? Do you actually have to be competent? Do you get market rate or do you get family rate? You know, what happens if there's a divorce? Addressing those kinds of issues and talking as a family, not letting a circumstance happen and then in chaos trying to make a decision. None of us make good decisions under stress. So we're getting in front of that. It's called governance, but we're building some governance of how are we going to operate as a family? Why are we in this business in the first place? What are our values? What are the standards that we hold as a family that we're going to uphold if we work in this business? And when you can get that kind of alignment and that work together in the family, it isn't going to eliminate all the arguments. I mean, families are families. We're going to have challenges for sure. But you've got that to lean back on when you run up against the tough questions of, well, is it your sister or your brother that's going to lead? Or, in fact, are neither one of you the right person? Because that's the big thing about succession planning. If a family decides we always want to have a family member running the business, then they better be working hard to develop that person.
Mm-hmm.
The right person to run the business is the most competent. Is it likely that that's always the family member? No. Could it be? You better work hard at it, right? You can't just assume that's going to happen. And again, because businesses are growing, markets change, it's complicated. And as you go from a sibling, second generation sibling generation, you start going into the third generation, the cousin federation, you've got a lot of dynamics that you're also operating with as that successor.
So interesting, Tom. I often talk about, you know, when we also seek out professional help, that quite often those professionals may stay in their lane. So the attorney stays in their lane of the legal side of it. The accountant stays in their lane for the tax side of it. The investment advisor stays in their lane. So this is really interesting because I think you guys are all over the road. So we are going to come back after this break and talk more about some of those nuances. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit WDIY.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am in the studio with Tom Garrity, managing partner of Compass Point Family Business Consulting. We're talking about succession planning, but really, it's almost any kind of family wealth transfer planning that you can apply it, you know, use this as an analogy. We were just talking to Tom about what needs to be navigated when we're talking about a family business and how it's more than just deciding who's going to run the business. It's understanding all of the different personality types, the different competencies, who's going to do what, but the family relationships and just running a business in general. So Tom, before the break, I had said, you know, that quite often I think people don't always have all of the options in front of them. Like at the end of every radio show, I say be proactive, not reactive. And how do we be proactive? When we're in front of our decision making, we have a lot more options. But when we seek out professional help, and I'm not blaming anyone, I'm just saying when you seek out professional help, quite often, as I said, the lawyers are staying in their lane, the accountants are staying in their lane, the investment advisors staying in their lane. And that's not bringing the family dynamics together. And it sounds to me, from like what you described, you do understand the business. I can understand that. But you're understanding much broader elements of that to make sure that all of that professional advice actually can be applied. Because if you don't do it the right way, it doesn't matter what professional advice you're getting. I mean, from my perspective. So could you talk a little bit about that, about the importance of navigating these issues and how you work with other professionals in that regard? And it might take longer than our break, yeah, sure. But we'll keep going with it.
Sure. So I full agreement with you, too, about us staying in our lane, everybody staying in their lane. But somebody needs to quarterback that. And again, we work in that entire system. So we're working with the business, we're working with the family, we're working with the ownership group. They all have different needs. And things can be done, if things are done in a particular domain, each one of those being a domain, but not being cognizant of what's going on in the other. For instance, we'll do shareholder reviews. Now, we're not attorneys, but we know what a shareholder mm-hmm. agreement should look like and at least be able to highlight and be able to ask questions. And so we're working with a family business, and in most cases, shareholder agreements have not been reviewed for years. It's everybody knows better, but they don't do it. They just don't get around to it. So In this case, we're building an emergency management plan for the owner. If something were to happen to you while we're in all this succession planning, what are we going to do tomorrow? And I said, let's look at your shareholder agreement so we know what happens to the transfer of stock. And what we find out in this is that he was married before and that his father-in-law had a right of first refusal. But his wife had passed and he had married a new woman and she was excluded from the shareholder agreement. So if something were to happen, it's all going to the former father-in-law, who he had a good relationship with, but by no means was that the goal of the family. Mm-hmm. That's us getting involved. Now, could an attorney seen that? For sure, but they didn't, because mm-hmm. we're trying to pay attention to everything that's going on in the mm-hmm. system. From an estate standpoint, I mean, in your work, we could make good decisions that will protect the assets, but are we doing the right things that is going to set the family up for success? And there's no perfect way to do that, mm-hmm. but absolutely talking and working mm-hmm. together and thinking about, hey, this isn't just about tomorrow. This is mm-hmm. about what's it going to be in 10 years? And we can't, you know, there's an old saying, you know, you can't manage the business in your estate from your grave, and you shouldn't, but
yeah, don't set it up. There's a lot you could do.
But don't set it up to be a failure, right? To uh-huh. set these kids up to fight with one another, for instance, because mm-hmm. nobody decided, you know, who the successor was going to be and run the business. So mm-hmm. It's really critical that the advisors do get together and are playing, you know, basically on the same sheet of music to support the owner. Most business owners, nothing drives them more crazy than to go, I don't know. Don't tell me my attorney's wrong. You go tell my attorney's wrong. I don't know what to say. Help me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, bring everybody together around the common goals. And if we're in the middle of a succession, you know, there's a lot of things going on in there. As I said a little bit earlier, this is really about business continuity, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't about just replacing you. It's not a replacement plan. And quite frankly, the business doesn't need you. It needs a successor that's going to take the business 10, 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. What's that look like? Well, we don't have a crystal ball, but we have a pretty good sense of where the business is going. And what's that leader need to look like? And the key piece there is leader, not owner. They may be an owner, but that gets confused. Well, I'm going to transfer my stock to my son, so he's going to be the CEO.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Maybe that's not a good decision. Yeah. Maybe he's not going to, or your daughter's not going to be a good CEO. Who's the best person to be the CEO? They can be owners, and then we can build governance around that of how the ownership group can support the executive team. But again, a lot of advisors involved in that, the CPAs from a tax standpoint, all those folks have to be considered. And they also have expertise that mm-hmm. that have been down the path a few times. So as we raise something and go, hey, I'm not sure that's going to work well with the kids. Well, okay, we tried this one, and then you've got just mm-hmm. everybody thinking together, and you're just way better than individually.
Well, you've just mentioned, you know, the owner and perhaps the kids, but there also could be a spouse. And I have seen a number of times where there's an assumption that it's going to a survive business interest or business management may be going to a surviving spouse, and that may not always be the case, because if you also have a business that you did not give that surviving spouse the permissions or the rights to do the manage of the business, the business may have to close up.
Absolutely. I can't believe how often it still goes on that in the will or in the estate plan is that my spouse, and in general, it's a male who's mm-hmm. Willing it to his wife, but it certainly could go the other way. She's now going to be 100% owner. And I go, I look at him and I go, she doesn't want to own this business. She wants the money legitimately. We need to take care of her. That's the whole, you guys worked your whole life to build this. She does not want to run the business. And it's just somehow that's just an easy way to do it. No, easy is not right.
Right.
We can think through this and protect her. That's the whole goal, or protect him if it's it's the wife for the husband. So, yeah, those are again bad decisions that the intent was, well, okay, I solved this, but not thinking of the unintended consequences.
Right, or making assumptions about how ownership may pass when, you know, it could depend on the entity structure, the entity setup, you know. Are we talking about a sole proprietor? Are we talking about an S-corp? Are we talking about a C-corp? Is it a partnership? What kind of agreements are you reading? What kind of governance, as you said? And I definitely want to talk more about governance, too. We're at our second break. If folks have questions, I'm speaking with Tom Garrity, managing partner of Compass Point Family Business Consulting. We're talking about succession planning. And if you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY, also available on many streaming services. We are talking about succession planning this evening with Tom Garrity of Compass Point Family Business Consulting. Always fun to work with families. And I truly mean that. I'm from a large family. My husband's from a large family. I love family dynamics. It just makes it all so interesting. So, Tom, we've been throwing out ideas when we talk about succession planning, making sure that, you know, you've consulted all these professionals and they've, you know, hopefully done their job on the various aspects of, you know, the right kind of ownership and or the legal documents that are needed under that. We talked about governance. We talked about make sure it's doing right. You're working with the family. Tell me what that looks like, because we can talk about it. If you could maybe kind of go through like a little bit of a scenario that you get the family together. Are they typically coming to you through a financial planner, through a lawyer, through an accountant? How are you getting, like, how do people find, you know, you and to take advantage of this kind of consulting services? And then once they are with you, what does that look like? You must be digging in deep to the details. I can tell looking at shareholder agreements, and I love details. So, sure. Yeah. So kind of give me a picture.
Yeah. So
this is new for people to hear. I've never had anyone on the show talk about this, and I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. And it's important work, because statistically, they're saying 70 or 80% of all businesses in the United States, and this pretty much matches out across the world, are family businesses. But when you take out all the solopreneurs or small, you know, two or three person Main Street kind of business, which are important too, that's not discounting those. But now you're down to probably about 25% of the economy is family business. And with the rates, you know, the succession rates, 33% make it to the second gen, 12% to the third, maybe 4% to the fourth. It's a big deal. These are really important businesses in our community. They're the foundation of our community. They're the big philanthropists. They're the take care of the little league. They provide jobs as well as create wealth for the family. So doing that work and helping these guys be successful is really important. Going back to help me out with the question again. When you had,
well, how number one, how do people
find
you?
Yeah, how do they find us? So obviously, a lot through folks like yourself or CPAs. They're working with a family and they hear something come up. My uncle and I don't get along. I'm arguing with my brother. We're at a standstill on what's our next step to grow the business. Our margins, maybe it's completely a business issue. Our margins are eroding and we don't know what to do. So that'll come through typically another advisor, right? Somebody else that's working with them and they see the family dynamic component of it, saying, hey, we know a firm, Compass Point, we can refer you in. We also do a lot of workshops and other, you know, marketing, et cetera, that people will come to us, but a vast majority are referred in. And again, it's a trigger point. Something's going on. The business is struggling. There's a succession event. The logical part of this isn't the hard part, right? It's the emotional part. I always say these family businesses, you think of those three domains, family, ownership, and business. It's three domains of love, power, and money. And they're just kegs of dynamite, right? That are waiting to, and it's mostly because people stop communicating There's sticky conversations to have. And so the worst thing we can do is not have the conversation. We create our own stories. We all have this in our families. No families are perfect, right? We all can sit here and go, oh my gosh, we do that too. We stop going to the family dinners or to the uncles and aunts, and suddenly we're not a tight family anymore. So for these family businesses to be successful, we don't need all to hold hands and kumbaya, but we need to be aligned. We need to be on the same page about who we are as a family and what are we committed to in terms of this business. And helping this business survive and be successful in the future, not just pulling money out of it and, you know, for our own benefit. So, all that varies on where a family is. There's the TV shows make it look like everything's a mess. Yeah, there certainly are some family businesses that are really struggling with some tough family dynamics, but everybody's got family dynamics. So our involvement is getting in and helping create some good structure, what we call governance again. So what's an example of governance? We'll sit down with a family, with members of the family that work in the business, but also their spouses and or children that don't work in the business, and we'll build out what we call a family constitution. And a family constitution starts with, you know, what are our values as a family? Like, what are our handful of rules of who we are as a family? And then it goes into why are we in this family business? It's an important question. If you're ever going to build alignment and that resilience in a family, you go to the why, right? You go to the why are we in this? And the stories that go back into the generations of how this got started, whether it was your parents or your grandparents or great grandparents, when those stories start to come out, it's like, oh my gosh, look what their vision was, and this pride in this, because that kind of resilience, you can't copy that. That's the competitive advantage you can build in these businesses, and that's why they can be sustainable. But you've got to do that work in the family. So getting the family aligned, and then start talking through those issues around, how does ownership work in this family business? Can anyone be an owner? Is it going to be gifted? Do you buy in? How is stock going to be priced? Who gets to work in the family business? Who doesn't? You know, all those kinds of, just working with the family, and as they it's their business. So in the end, they make all, we're going to give them best practices, but they're going to decide. And now it starts to create a plan of the development that they can start with the kids on prepare, if they're interested. I think that's the key too. Don't wait to have the conversation with your children about potentially either working in the business or being a successor, because number one, they might not be interested. And if you wait too long, you've boxed yourself into a corner. And again, now bad things happen, right? People are angry and there's fighting and lose value and all that stuff. So it's important that the kids have a voice, and it's hard to do it without a third party involved, because it's hard to say no to your dad or your mom. It's hard to tell your child yes or no, right? But the kids having a voice to, yes, I do want to do this. That's the first step. And now you're building a leadership track of like, all right, well, here's the development plan of what it looked, not automatically you're in the seat. Here's the development plan that we need to put you through, whether it's outside schooling, it's rotating around in the business, but really, and it's this, it's the transfer of relationships. That's what so many owners take for granted. They're like, well, I don't know, it's not that big of a deal. No, you have all the owners, you have all the relationships, not just internally, but with all the rest of the stakeholders. We've got to transfer all that, and that all takes time.
Well, I think too, you know, you're also probably helping navigate for the owner the giving up of some control at some point. And that's probably one of the biggest hurdles that you have to kind of overcome and expose to them the flaw in not doing the planning today. I often will say to clients, because estate planning is one of the hardest areas to get people to do their work, you know, less than half the people have wills. And I will say, my saying is, if you plan, nothing happens. You know how when you buy insurance and you pay all this money for insurance and you never use it? Same thing with plan. You know, plan for your estate planning, plan for that business succession, and maybe you'll be in business that much longer. Folks, we're at the halfway point. We're talking with Tom Garrity, managing partner of Compass Point Family Business Consulting, about succession planning and navigating the nuances of that. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back, everyone. Talking with Tom Garrity about succession planning. So, Tom, we were talking about the nuances. We were talking about the family dynamics, getting everyone together in the room. It could be spouses, could be children, could be spouses of children. It may not always be direct family members either. It could be siblings. It could be even, I would imagine, even other business partners, because sometimes there's business owners who don't have maybe a spouse or children. And it would be about succession planning for them as well, because family is beyond bloodline sometimes. Even in work that you may be doing, governance in nonprofit worlds or, you know, these other kinds of businesses. But before we went to the brink, we were talking about that quite often it's that owner who is the hardest one to get to move. So number one, let's pretend we have people who might be listening who are business owners or advisors, attorneys or financial planners or accountants out there who may see this. What would be your message to any of these people to get them to act? I mean, we talked about silver tsunami. Don't wait till you're 70 to do this. In fact, I think sometimes when you're starting a business and you see that it's going to have that trajectory, start as soon as you can doing this governance early. But what would be the message to get someone to realize they have to act now to, number one, keep their legacy and or that asset growing for that legacy as well? Whatever it might be. So yeah. What's the message?
So the first message is the statistics speak for themselves.
There you go. And you did mention those. Yeah,
there's a reason that only 33% make it to the second gen, 12% to the third, whatever, 4% to the fourth. It's not that people don't care. It's the lack of planning. It's the lack of preparation. You know, when we were finishing up in the last segment, we were talking about power and control. They're very powerful forces. And one of the beautiful things that you bring in your profession to this conversation is exposing the financial picture so everybody can see what's going on and what the future looks like. Now, we have to have the future work out, but we have a we can see it. Mm-hmm. When you don't know, what is it replaced with? Fear. And fear always leads to bad outcomes, right? We just make bad. So and every owner goes through this. It's a big hurdle when they've been able to keep this all to themselves to now have to bring in other people in the family to understand what we have financially. You know, a lot of owners go through, and again, it could speak of second or third generation, and it could be more than just a single owner, right? We could have several. I don't want to spoil my kids. I don't want trust fund kids. Yeah, well, then don't do that. Start educating them, right? You know, but it takes work. And I think that one of the biggest mindsets for owners to, that the shift has to be from working, you know, there's the classic e-myth description of working on the business versus working in the business. Owners need to move from being a technician doing the things their business does. And even if they were the deal maker or, you know, the great CEO that made this whole thing happen, they move from that role to being an architect for the new business, for the new generation.
I love that.
That's hard work.
Oh, there's your message right there, Tom. I love that, because anybody who's an entrepreneur loves building, right? Yeah. I love that analogy. They become the architect. They become the architect for the addition.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
You know?
And so now you're, when you start thinking about the successor, again, not my replacement, the successor, what's the business need? What's the family need? Especially if it's a founder, he or she's probably played the lead role in the business, the lead role in the family, and probably a lead role, they're a single owner, they're in the ownership group. Now this thing moves to the second generation. We've got more family involved. We've got the siblings. We've got their spouses. Could have employment of their spouses. Who knows what all that starts to look like. We need leadership in the family, not from a single entity that's somehow going to have all this great leadership in the business. And, oh, by the way, I'm also a great leader in the family. And, oh, I know how to hold our ownership group together. That's the architect work. You start, mm-hmm. and that's, you know, again, some of the terminology we use around is like governance. So what would governance be in that second generation as you're in transition, maybe preparing for the third? For sure, a board. For sure, a building out a board of advisors, a board of directors, somewhere in that second generation. It typically doesn't happen in the founder, but it could. That can be there to provide some advice, counsel, and connections, that third-party objectiveness to help you stay on track to successfully get this to the next generation. So many family businesses, you know, two things that are real typical. I don't want anyone to know my business because mm-hmm. they'll be knocking on my doors if they do. And I don't want anyone to tell me what to do. So you need to get over both. First of all, nobody's going to be knocking down your door. And nobody's going, no advisor is going to go share all your information, for gosh sakes. That's they're not going to be in business. So people need to understand what you have so they can help you continue in your planning. And this ability to, you know, to really think about, again, what's the business need beyond me?
Mm-hmm.
That's the architect work.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you know, at the beginning of the show, I said, you know, this can translate to more than just businesses, because I hear the same thing from clients, sometimes clients of wealth say, I don't want my kids to know. I don't want my kids to, I want them to go work hard. And I've said similar things to them. We can still talk to them without disclosing everything, you know, because at some point those people you will have to rely on. And I always assume something's going to happen every single day. So in a business, if something happens to that owner and they don't have that intellectual knowledge or that instinct or whatever, and you haven't talked to anybody about it, then, you know, it's just going to hurt the business in the long run. So we want to bring some governance to family businesses. So you guys, your team, you have 9 consultants, right. You said. Your team comes in. You're taking different pieces, maybe?
Yeah. So it varies, of course. It depends on where the family business is and what their needs are. So we could come in, and it could be all around strategy and growth, right? This is a business that just needs to improve its margins and improve its processes. Classic family business issue, not just family businesses, but classic in family businesses. Lots of institutional knowledge, not processes documented.
Right.
That costs money. That means people don't know how to do it because they haven't gained all the tribal
right.
knowledge. Yeah, we're very good at that. Processes, systems, right people, right seats, good strategy, discipline, execution, get the margins. That's super important. But time and change, right? There's an old Stoic saying that no man enters the same river twice, for he's never the same man, and it's never the same river.
Mm.
Time and change. Mm. So what is important to the family business this year could be completely different next year. Mm-hmm. Business might not change a lot. I'll guarantee you things have changed in the family. Mm-hmm. They're older. There's new members maybe have come in. Maybe family members mm-hmm. have moved out. Same thing could be happening in the business. All that dynamic is going to require, again, good, back to this governance. You know, if you've got a board that's providing some governance for the business, and you've got a family council that's providing a forum for the family to meet, and you've got an owner's council as that ownership group grows that provides them, it is their business. So what's the forum to bring them together? High level, what do we want out of this business? What are our choices between liquidity, control, and growth? I can't have all three. I can get 2 out of the 3, right? So what do we want and what's important to us? What markets do we want to make sure we always stay in? What's the brand we want to hold? Whatever that is for the owners. But all of that, as I go back to earlier, requires leadership. And as these family businesses generationally move along, if they don't build that leadership, that's why the statistics fall off. They just haven't built the structure to survive as it just gets more complex. And complexity isn't bad. You just need to build the structure to manage it.
And I had, as an example, I was helping a family on the periphery. One family member was our client, and there was a family business, and the parents handed over the business to one of the four kids, and the other three kids owned the buildings where the business ran. And it was very interesting to me. And there was an agreement that was put up. So again, back to governance, it's not just maybe about the roles that people have, but governance as to what happens at some point when they need to kind of negotiate how this moves forward, because they were tied to each other.
Yeah.
And there was an agreement that at this date, this sale was going to go through, and this is how the sale was going to be, the value and the terms were already kind of like predetermined. And at the time, there were some tax changes. This is going back several years. There were some tax changes. And I said, I think you should sell the buildings this year. And they're like, oh, but our agreement says next year. I said, you're a family. You've got this agreement. Go talk to each other and see, you give a little, he gives a little, and it ended up saving hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you also want to build in some flexibility, right?
For sure.
So when you have these family members, and the family members have to realize, you don't necessarily have to be tied to that sibling who may be running things, because if the governance is done properly, you can have an out, perhaps, correct? Is that kind
absolutely
of what you see?
And I think it's important, as let's say we're in a family business and we've got several shareholders in there, family shareholders. And you made the point earlier, sometimes some of the shareholders are not family. They're non-family shareholders. So that can be a piece of this. But I think it's important to always give the option for liquidity for a shareholder. Don't force people that they have to stay. Now, you can't choke the business. So you're going to, back to shareholder agreements and how you set that up and how we're going to value the stock and what's the terms of the payout and all of that. But you can do that. Forcing somebody to remain in ownership, that's like forcing a kid to go work in the business. Mm-hmm. It's just not, there's no need for it. It's going to create problems. It's going to create stress and anxiety and just bad, probably issues in the business. So,
but if you don't have a plan, you could force a lot of decisions to be made.
Yeah.
Meaning you may have to sell everything in order to satisfy someone wanting to get out.
Yeah. And or, we talked about the silver tsunami earlier, not just the baby boomers, but what's happened a lot in this generation is they've created tremendous wealth in these businesses. Many cases, the value of the business is greater than their lifetime exemptions.
Mm.
There's a tax consequence. That's why when you hear like, what? The Miami Dolphins the family had to sell the Miami Dolphins, pay tax? Now, that's an extreme example of multi-millions. But you can have a business that could be, valued at $70 million, and you're outside of the lifetime exemptions. That estate tax, if you've not managed that with any asset planning, with any trust planning, is going to have to be paid. Where is that liquidity going to come from? Now, you could have a plan for the liquidity. If you don't have a plan, that's why businesses sometimes have to sell. There's no other option. We have no other capital in order to pay. So back to your point and kind of the big message here on everything is you've got to plan. Mm-hmm. This is the work of getting the business started and while you ran it was super important. The final 10 years are all, I always say it's way harder to getting out of these things than getting in. You've got the work that it takes these last 10 years are critical.
Yeah. And it is critical to understand the estate planning too, which is why, if you put your head in the sand, you're the owner, you don't want anybody to know anything. Well, if they don't know anything, we can't plan for it. And you don't always understand the circumstances of it. And when we come back from this break, I'm going to touch quickly on the federal estate exemptions and what Tom meant with that and why it really is critical for very successful, potentially growing businesses, whether it, you might think it's small, but it may not be as small as you think in 5 or 10 years without the proper planning. Folks, if you have questions, there's still time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Hi, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. I have with me Tom Garrity of Compass Point Family Business Consulting. We're talking about succession planning. And I want to go to a couple. Oh, and if you have questions, phone number 610-758-8810. I want to go to a couple points you made, Tom, because, you know, I have a background in estate planning, and quite often people don't realize what goes into the valuation of estate planning. And if you're not paying attention, it can get away from you. And when I started in the business, I think there was what we're talking about is a federal estate tax exemption. So people can be subject to a federal estate tax when they die, which is at the rate of 40% estate tax. And back when I started in the business, this exemption was $600,000. And there was all kinds of crazy planning you would have to do to take advantage of, you know, a surviving deceased spouse exemption, et cetera, et cetera. And over the years, that federal estate exemption has gone up, you know, over the years, to the tune of, in 2026, it's $15 million. So we each have an exemption of $15 million. Sounds a lot for the ordinary person, but when we're talking about business owners, you can get there very quickly. And even for individuals, you sometimes forget or don't think about the net worth that you have that would be subject to the federal exemption. It could be life insurance if you didn't do the ownership properly using an irrevocable life insurance trust called an ILET, which I'm sure many of your business owners probably have, Tom. So there are certain ways that you can work around trying to cover the estate tax that you may be subject to in a federal estate tax filing. But there are assets and valuations that have to be done. It's often the highest and best use if you have land in your family business, or highest and best use of business ownership. And that business ownership may have discounts applied to it, or it may not, depending on the ownership. And if working with someone like Tom, when you're looking at governance and ownership, there may be strategies you could use to help with those valuations to, you know, protect the assets, preserve the assets. But if you don't do it, then you could have that exposure. And what Tom was talking about, having to sell assets to pay the federal estate tax, we call that a fire sale, because the federal estate tax is due 9 months after someone dies, and whether you extend it or not. And that fire sale could cause the family, the loved ones, people who don't know better, maybe they don't know about the governance, they weren't brought into the business, they have no concept of the value of it, they could end up selling. And I've seen that. I've seen people who have actually taken advantage of a business that had to do a fire sale. And it feels sad, and it feels like it's sad for the person that had to do the fire sale. And then the person who walks away with that discounted, you know, property, they can go sell it at a huge profit. So let's, you know, we have like 10 minutes, 9 minutes left, Tom. If you could kind of tell me a little bit about some of that planning, because you've talked about understanding the families almost like the therapy. You're kind of trying to help the family navigate the emotions and the family dynamics to get that proper governance to keep the business going. But you also mentioned some other things you guys do, which I think is also getting into the nuts and bolts to make sure that the business is successful. It's not just the governance and how you're passing the asset or the ownership, but it's also making sure that business is going to continue to run optimally, because you mentioned helping with processes.
Right.
So could you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So, again, the three domains of the family business system, family, business, and ownership, we work in all three domains. So, and from a business perspective, I want to say we're going to help professionalize. Now, I don't mean that like we're going to create a corporate culture and bureaucratize it. I mean, the beauty of a family business is the family and a lot of that culture that a family often can bring and portray. But discipline, good processes, the right people in the right seats.
I liked that. Actually, you said that earlier, and yeah. I really liked
it's
that.
It's
so I think
critical.
That's important.
And you know, and families get, not just families, but it really happens a lot in family businesses. I know he's probably not the right person, she's not the right person, but you know, they've been with me a long time, and or, oh my God, they cause us a lot of trouble, but man, they produce the results. They bring in the sales or whatever. There is never a time when either that person decides to leave or they don't get on the bus, so to speak, of who we're going to be, you know, what our values are and live our values, that person's not either leaves on their own or dismissed, that the entire company doesn't do a collective, everybody does. Mm-hmm. Everybody does. And the next question is, what took so long? Mm. So, and that is probably even more detracting from the success of the business than any great strategy, right? Peter Drucker, one of the grandfathers of modern management, said, culture eats strategy for breakfast every day. Culture eats strategy for breakfast every day. Yeah, great plans. But if you've got a culture that's dysfunctional, political, talking around the water cooler,
yeah.
Not committed, no trust, mm-hmm. you can't get anywhere. And that can happen just in the business alone. That can also happen in the family, and that can leak into the business. That's why this governance is so critical, to address these issues and to have agreements with one another about, you know, what stays here and what doesn't need to go into the business, right? This isn't business stuff. This is family issue. We deal with it in the family outside of the business if that's what's going on and appropriate. So again, depending on where that family business is, we're almost always in the business to some extent, you know, in strategy and keeping them disciplined to the plan that we've laid out with them, monitoring the success, you know, making sure we're building value. You said earlier, when you create a plan, you have choices.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. the whole goal. Our job on the business side is to create a transferable business. It's not transferable if it relies on the owner. It's not, because the owner's not going with the business. It's not transferable. So owners often discount how much the business relies on them. They're this hub, and all these spokes got to come to them for decisions. That's our job, to get the owner out of being that key. And that's one of the hard things, is back to power and control and egos. And all that can be with really great people. Not you know, and some people can be really wired that way. But that's what will hold a business back. But when we can get a business to run without the owner and produce predictable, repeatable results, oh, now you have a real business. You've got a family that's committed to support that with capital, with talent, with good governance, with helping develop next generation, some of which may work in the business, some may not. But the idea of that family business having the continuity of some family members in there, that's the fun of these family businesses. That's the pride we have when we're in them. And then the ownership group, they often get neglected, but as these things go out generationally, you know, to the second and third gen, there's multiple owners. And some work in the business and some don't. Some are family, some aren't. It's their business, though, and they have an important role. They don't run the business. If they're not a manager in the business, then their job is not to go run the business, right? That's huge. We got to have the right governance that creates the sort of firewalls of what their role. But they still have a huge role. What's their role? Their role is, what's your strategy as an ownership group, high level? I said this a little bit earlier. What do you want to see out of this business? Do we want to see consistent EBITDA of 12%? Do you want to see market penetration in X and Y? Do you want to see the brand? We never leave this brand. Do we want to see these kind of products? I don't know, high level that an executive team can go execute on. That's their job. And the board of advisors who oversees the executive team is ensuring that they've got the right plan and are executing it to get those results. So now you've got all three domains working well together. And that's the work we do.
Do you help the owners find that board? Or that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a big piece because I go back to power and control. I don't want anyone telling me what to do. I go, well, first of all, you're hiring all the board, so you also get to fire them. Now, we don't want to be firing people. So let's do a good job of hiring them in the first place. So who should we hire? Well, how about we get people aligned to our core values? That would be a good start. Mm. How about we get people that want to give back because they've been there?
Yeah.
And there are lots of people, business owners that have been down through the journey, and they do want to give back, and they've got such great expertise, and that's what they're there for. It's for the advice, the counsel, and the connections, and a good board will keep you focused on and help you get through some of that sticky wicket stuff of some of the family discussions or decisions that have to be made, because it can just be an objective party to say, hey, I think we need to look at it this way.
Let me ask you, Tom, too, and we have a few minutes left, but one thing came out when you were talking about this, when you said about having the right people in the right seats, and you have an owner who's probably typically kind of been that hub. And they really kind of also, probably in my imagination here, should, in letting go, start identifying those people who can be that difference maker, who can, you know, help carry the business forward. So when, are you also working with those maybe key people who aren't part of the family?
That's a great point. All right. So I said earlier, if the audience could see me, they'd see I'm part of the Silver Tsunami. So I own my business. Now, in my case, I have a fairly young leadership team, but that's not the common situation, right? Everybody looks the same age because they are. That's all it's who you grew up with. So yes, it isn't just the successor of who's running the business. It's the entire leadership team that we are working on. Mm-hmm. And in the case of the next generation, whether the next generation is going to be the key successor and or some role in the business, they need to be a part of helping decide who that next team is. Who's going to support them in their role if, in fact, they're working in the business? But yeah, to answer your question, it's not just the president owner that we're looking at succession. It's all that key leadership.
You know, and I'm going to say one other point, and then we'll do our closing, is, you know, these key leaders sometimes, if you're always, you know, kind of in control, you haven't necessarily let that team grow and thrive and to see what they can do. Sometimes get out of their way. I like to say, get out of their way. If you've hired good people, and you know, I grew up, my parents were self-employed, small business hardware, but every job I've ever had, I think I own the company and that's how I work. And if you can find people who work like that, boy, you know, I want to say, just let me do my thing.
Yep.
So Tom, a minute left. How do people reach out to you if they've heard something that struck a chord, whether it's a financial advisor, a CPA, attorney, if they find that they have businesses or even business owners, what's your website? Is that how people would find you?
The website is compasspt.com. The email address is tgarrity@compasspt.com.
And your phone number
is? And the phone number is 610-366-0514.
Okay. Thank you for coming on.
I think this is great.
We cannot emphasize the criticalness of this, really. I mean, I see it from my side on the tax side, and I know you see it. And We love nothing more than jumping in and getting to know all these people, right? And understanding their details to help them be successful, because then that also reflects on us and helps us be successful. So, Tom, thank you so much. We hope to have you on again some other time. Folks, next week, I'm just going to talk about getting ready for tax season, what you need to do, and so give you some tips around that. Coming up, thank you, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Bridger. Thank you again, Tom Garrity from Compass Point Business, Family Business Consulting. And coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.